So we're on Daf Vav Amud Aleph, and let's just review the bottom of Daf Hey Amud Beis, so that we'll be able to, you know, move forward on Daf Vav Amud Aleph. The Gemara quotes Shmuel, and Shmuel is of the opinion that you don't need three judges on a Doraisa level. The entire institution of three judges as a Beis Din is Derabanan. And b'di'eved, if there was a judgment with less than three judges, then we fall back on the Doraisa, and we're going to recognize and validate the judgment. We're not going to get very excited about this case where, you know, there was less than three judges. We're going to call this a Beis Din Chatzuv. But nevertheless, the judgment is valid. And this seems to contradict a Mishnah later on Daf Chof Tes, that's Rava's Kasha, because the Mishnah says that if one of the three judges says Eini Yodea, then he has to be replaced. Now, it seems like the Mishnah postulates an absolute rule without exception, we need three judges, whereas Shmuel says that we can validate the judgment even with less than three judges. So the Gemara says that Mishnah is talking about a case where they started the din with three judges, and the rule is that the number that you start with is the number that you have to end with. So if one of them says any yodeh, he can't be part of the Beis, then we have to replace it. But in a case where from the get-go they began with less than three judges, that's fine. Although again, it's a Beis Din Chatzuv. Then we had a brisa of Rav Shimon Gamliel. So this you'll see about five lines up from before the end of Hey Amud Beis. Take a look at this inside. Rav Shimon Gamliel says that to paskin a din, you need three judges. But pshara, all you need is two judges. So we're going to have a long discussion with Shem today about the concept of pshara, which means that the litigants agree to appoint, in this case, two judges to create some sort of a compromise, a mediation between them. And here, all you need is two judges. So Rav Shimon Gamliel says that whereas din, if you're paskening based on the Torah law, you require three judges, but pshara requires no more than two judges. Then Rabbi Gamliel makes a general statement. He says, there is a certain superior status to pshara, a certain koach or an authority to pshara that goes beyond din. And that's the case of Shnayim, if there were only two judges, because in a case where there was a din and it was not a pshara, there were two judges, then that decision that's handed down by two judges is not binding. What do I mean it's not binding? It lends itself to appeal. And the Bali Dinim, again, probably the one who is going to serve to lose, he's going to get up and he's going to say, well, I want a new judgment. And he's within his rights to do so, says Rav Shimon Gamliel, because there were only two judges. So Rav is going to quote this brisa as a contradiction to Shmuel, because Shmuel says that a decision that was handed down by two judges is valid, it's binding, and yet Rav Shimon Gamliel says that a decision made by two judges, if it's din, unless it's pshar, but if it's din, is balei dinim yichol lachzor b'hem, they can decide that they don't want to accept this judgment. And that's against Shmuel, who says that the judgment is absolutely binding. So the Gemara answers that although it's true that Rav Shimon Gamliel rejects Shmuel, but nevertheless the Chachamim didn't accept Rav Shimon Gamliel, so that Shmuel can stand on the shoulders of the Chachamim. Even though Rabbi Avo is going to claim that everybody agrees, even the Chachamim, that a din of Shnayim, of two judges, is not valid. But Gavra Gavra Karamis, he can't ask a question from one Amora to another Amora. Rabbi Avol, according to Shita, he thinks that it's an absolute requirement of three judges. Less than three judges is not a valid judgment. Shmuel, on the other hand, holds that we don't need three judges. And when Rav Shimon Gamliel says that we need three judges, that's his opinion, but the Chachamim disagree. Rabbi Avo says, no, the Chachamim never disagreed. Shmuel's allowed, he's within his bounds to say that the Chachamim disagree. And this led us to the Sugya of Gufa, which you'll see on the third line on Daf Vav Amud Aleph. So that's where we want to pick it up today. So the last word in the third line on Daf Vav Amud Aleph is Gufa. Now, the Gufa always means that we go back to the Guf, to the essence of the stay. We're going to analyze the mainstay of a statement that was quoted earlier. And which statement are we going to analyze now? Omar Rabbi Avo, Shnaim Shedanu, Dine Momenos, Lidire Akol, Ein Dineim Din. Which means that less than three judges, according to Rabbi Avo, is not a din. Eisvei Rabbi Abba, Lirabbi Avo. Eisvei is like Meisvei. Usually, Meisvei means I have the Gemara itself anonymously has a contradiction. Eisvei means in an active verb, he asked. Eisvei, he asked. Again, it means the same as Meisvei, but Meisvei is a word that's used when we have an objective contradiction. Nobody brought it to our attention. The Gemara itself is aware of this, but Eisvei means that somebody asked this question. This has to be on. Okay, I put it on song. Okay, now we have Rabbi Abba's kasha. Rabbi Abba asks Rabbi Avo from a Mishnah in Masechta Bechoros. The Mishnah says the following. Now let me just introduce, what's the subject of this Mishnah? The subject of this Mishnah is the obligation of a judge to compensate the grieved litigant in a case of a tos, in a case where the judge made a mistake. And the sugya revolving around this Mishnah is going to try to analyze what kind of a mistake did the judge make? What was the nature of his error? Fine. So what does the Mishnah say? Don es hadin. This is interesting. The word din is a noun. The word don is a verb. So it means he judged a judgment, which means he, the dayan, the judge, handed down a decision, a din. The zika es achayov. So again, the word zika is a verb. The word zakai is a noun. So the person who was let off the hook, so to speak, he was found innocent or free of any obligation to pay any monies, he's called a zakai. And zika is the verb that describes the act of the judge. So the judge, zika es hachayev. Now the word chayev is a noun. The conjugation as a verb would be chiev. But chayav means he is chayav. But zika means that the judge found him guiltless and he doesn't have to pay any money. But in truth, he's chayav. Do you see that? You know, it's a funny phrase over here. It says, zika es achayav. What does that mean? Well, the word chayav is a reference to the truth, the objective truth. This person is chayav. But the subjective verb, meaning the action that was done, the decision that was handed down by the dayan was zika. He found him free of any penalties or any payments. He let him off the hook when in truth he was chayav. So Rav Ose, if I tell you that in truth he was chayav, but the judge found him not chayav, which is called zakai, what does that imply? What does that definitely mean about the judgment? It was an error, correct. This was not a correct judgment, because according to the law, this person is chayav, and instead the judgment and the decision that was handed down by the judge was zika, was that he's zakai and he's not chayav. Now the vav here in the next word, vechiev, is going to be what we call a vav hamachalek, right? Because whenever you see two phrases and they're opposites, they're flip sides, and there's a vav in between, then the vav is a vav hamachalek. What's a vav hamachalek? Oh, right, the word, the vav, when you add a vav to conjugate a word, a verb, it has two possible interpretations. It could either be a vav hamachaber, which means this and that, or it could be a vav hamachalik, which means this or that. How do I know which one it is? Well, I would say in 70%, 80% of the cases, the vav is a vav hamachaber. It means this and that. So if you see a vav, you know it's combining this plus that. The exception to the rule is when on the two sides of the vav you have flip sides, you have opposites. So if you look here carefully in this braisa, actually it's a Mishnah, the Mishnah that's being quoted says Zika es achayev, and then it says Chiyev es azakai. Then those are the two opposites. So the vav must be an O. So it's either A or B. It's either A, which is the case of Zika es achayev, or it's B, the flip side, when it's Chiyev es azakai. Chiyev is a verb that describes the decision that was made by the judge. And he decided that so and so is chayev, he has to pay. But in truth, if we describe that person that he said was chayev, he's a zakai. He's really not chayev. There was an error in judgment. So the judgment that was handed down by this judge is a wrong judgment. It's an error judgment. That is what we call the resha of the Mishnah. Now we get to the seifa of the Mishnah. Now the Sefer of the Mishnah, I just warn you, has to be taken under advisement as a separate topic whatsoever. Meaning, at this point in my life, I'm not going to tell you I understand the Sefer. You'll have to sue me for damages, but I don't know what the Sefer means. It means the following. We have grains or fruits, and we have to determine whether or not they are tameh or tahar, they are ritually pure or contaminated. Let's say sheretz, some sort of a creature that's metameh, fell onto a basket of fruits. Now, for argument's sake, let's say these fruits were truma and they have kedusha, and there's a very severe profound difference between truma tmeya, which has to be burnt, and truma tahora, which has to be eaten b'kedusha u'b'tahara. So there was an issue about these fruits. Did they come in contact with the sheretz? Did they not? And this issue was brought in front of the Mora Hora, and the Mora Hora, who had to decide, he time. Now notice the yud that was added to the word tame. Tame is a noun. And when you add the yud, that puts a chirik under the test, and that makes it into a verb. So it means describing the decision. The decision was time. He went ahead and he pronounced this as tame. And in fact, the truth, the objective truth is that it was tar. Now again, it says vav. So once again, it's a vav hamachale, because now we're going to switch it around the other way. Tier. Now look, the yud is added to the word tar. Tar is a noun. But here he adds the yud to make it into tiyah, which makes it into a verb. Es ha-tame. Tame is the noun that describes the truth about these fruits. So we have a new essay here. The title of the essay is The Truth About the Fruits. And the truth about the fruits in the first case is that really that tar. And the truth about the fruits in the second case is that really tame. And in both cases, the hora was betos. It was a mistaken hora. And this is a very severe repercussions here, because if the truma is really tar, and the Mora Hora issued a verdict that it's tame, then what did they do? Well, not yet, maybe, but what will they do eventually with these fruits? Hello, anybody home? No. Nobody's listening. Again, what are you going to do with these fruits? Objectively, they're tar, but the Mora Hora pronounced them as tame. What are you going to do with these fruits now in light of his hora? You're going to burn them up in smoke. Why? Because that's what you do with truma tmeya. You burn it. Tieres Atome, that's even worse, because really you have to burn this truma, and he paskin that it's tar, so that he's going to tell the Kohen to eat the truma, but Kedusha Betaro, when this truma is truma tmei, it has to be burnt. So that's the seifa. Now, in all the cases, whether it's the monetary mistake, in the case of Dini Momonos, where he was Mezakas Achayev or Machayevas Azakai, whether it's the Tumah Vitara cases where he was Metamei Satoru or Metara Satome, Masha Osa Osui. Well, that's a complicated phrase. Let's see if we can translate this. Masha Osa, that which was done, Osui, it's done. What does that mean when you say that which was done is done? I mean, that sounds like redundancy.
Sounds like
it means it's irreversible. Masha asa asui. If you're taking notes here, please write down the words masha asa asui, and the translation of that is it's irreversible. Now Tosfos has a major problem here, which I can't answer. He says, I understand in the first case where the judge issued a verdict in a monetary case. The money was transferred over from one to the other. And if you're telling me that we validate that decision and Halacha validates it, even though he made a mistake, then Masha Asa Asui means that the money, again, perhaps illegally, but the money was transferred over from Ruve to Shimon, and that's irreversible. There is no appeal court. This is not like a Western society where if you feel that your grievance is by the decision of a lower court, you can appeal to a higher court. Even in the West, that's not so simple. There are many stumbling blocks that they put in front of you in order to appeal the case. But in Halacha, there's no such thing as an appeal. It's either black or white. Either the judgment is not a judgment and it's not valid, or it's valid and then it's irreversible. You can't take it to a higher court. So this Mishnah in Bechoros is telling us about the Reisha in the case of Hadon, Esadin, Zika, Ezechayev, Chiyuv, Esazakai, Masha Asa Asui. There's no way that Reuven, who paid $1,000 based on the error of the judge, can get his money back from Shimon, because Shimon now is taking the money and he put it in his bank and that's it. Fafalin, as we say in Yiddish. It's gone. It's history. Now in the Seifa, Tosa says, I don't understand what's going on over here. The Dayan pronounced something that's Tar as Tomei. Okay. So what? Well, was geschehen? What happened over here? He decided in his mind it's Tomei. We know it's Tar. So what's Masha Asa Asu?
Because it's already destroyed or eaten or thrown, whatever.
Well, then I don't need the Mishnah to tell me that if it's destroyed, it's destroyed. Masha Asa Asu means that his psak remains valid and it's not bottle. If they already burnt the truma, there's nothing to talk about. So Tosis is bothered. What do you mean Masha Asa Asu? The man made a pronouncement. So what happened? All of a sudden it becomes Tomei because he decided it was Tomei. It's Tar. He can't make it into Tomei. In the case of payment, the money was transferred from one hand to the other. And then you could say, well, that's a valid psak, and he doesn't have recourse to get his money back. But in the case of being metamei satamei, what does that mean?
He has to give him property that's tar.
No, but we're asking a different question here. We're asking, in truth, these payros are tahorim, let's say in the first of the two cases. Mm-hmm. You can flip it around in the second case.
Right.
So what happened over here? They brought it to the Moreh Ra, so he said that it was Tomei. Then we find out that he made a mistake, he made a boo-boo. Like, you bring me a chicken, and you ask me if the chicken is kosher or if it's not kosher. So I say to you, it's not kosher. Then you prove to me that I made a boo-boo, and it's kosher. So it's kosher. I mean, the fact that I decided that it's treif, that doesn't make it treif. It doesn't change the reality of the chicken. If I decide that these pears are tmeim, so what? It becomes tamei? Is there some sort of magical formula over here? Tosis has a real problem with this.
Maybe that's the case. That's the whole point. Once it's a din, if we consider it a din, It's din. We come from Tommy to...
That's excellent, Osher. The only problem is it's not din. It's Horos Isa Veheter, meaning there is no din.
That's not what we said before. There's a sheet that says that it's a din. That's like a Beis Din, right?
We're not in Tara and Tuma. Nobody says that Tuma and Tara is Din, as far as I know.
Dan at the Dan. Dan at the Din.
No, that's the Reisha. The Reisha is Danas Had Din, meaning in Dini Momenos. The Seifa was the case with the Horah of a Chacham was on Peros, and tell me, Mori Varabi, tell me, is this Tommy or is it Torah? So the Rebbe made a mistake. So what happened? Well, Vasa Geshein, we said.
But he made the mistake in the first ones also.
No, but in the case of the first one, he paid up, as you'll soon see. That's why there's going to be a compensation here.
Yeah.
So if he paid up, and the Halacha recognizes this din despite the toes, and that's going to be the whole next sugya, why does the Halacha accept this as a din, and it's an irreversible din, then he has no recourse to get his money back. That's my shasa asui. But there's no din in a case of tvua. It's not like I'm claiming, well, this is mine, my fruits, and you're claiming, no, it's your fruits, and so forth and so on.
No,
I'm just asking you, as a rabbi, please tell me, what is the status? I saw the sheretz, did it touch, did it not touch, did it come in contact with the fruits, did it not? You know, did it have a shear of tumah? Whatever the different issues is. So you made a mistake. You told me it was tumah. So what? What happened here? Nothing changed.
They didn't change the status, but because he declared the status to be tumah, he can't use it for what he wanted to do.
Yeah, but Don, here's the question. What is the significance of a declaration? A proclamation has no significance. It doesn't change the reality. If the reality is that there was no sheretz there, or whatever the case may be, then there's no tumah. You can't create tumah ex nihilo just because he made a proclamation and it's tumah. He was mistaken. You know, let him learn the laws a little bit better, but don't tell me it became tumah.
That's the safe of the Mishnah.
That's what Tosas doesn't know. That's what Tosas doesn't know. What does Masha also mean in the safer? That's why I told you, Rabbi Osai. I'm not responsible for the safer. I don't know if you heard me.
But so then what's the end of the Mishnah meaning, Mishalim Beisel then? What is he paying for? It's got to be paid for. There's somehow a loss. What's the loss?
No, the Mishalim Beisel goes back on the ratio to the monetary case.
Who says?
That's what Tosis assumes. I don't know. Okay, Rabosai, again, if you want, maybe we'll come back tomorrow and we'll convene a Bezdin on Timei Asatame Vitira Sator, okay? But right now, I'm just telling you that if you have any sort of confusion about Timei Asator, Vitira Asatame, you're in good company. You're on the same page as Tosis. That's not bad. You know, it's not a bad thing to be on the same page as Tosis, okay? Yeah.
When the Kohen says it's Saras or not Saras.
Ooh, that's interesting, yeah. That could be that Saras actually depends on the Kohen. You're right. That might be not what we call clarification, but rather declaration. Do you know that in law, there's a very fundamental distinction between between clarification law and declaration law. And in Lomdus, in Reb Chaim's Lomdus, we would call that Eidus L'Kiyum HaDover, Eidus L'Bira HaDover. So clarification is called Birur HaDover. There are some rare cases where there's some sort of power called L'Kiyum HaDover, which means that the Torah invests you with an authority to actually create a new status, a new halachic status. I don't think that should apply here in Talmud, in Peros, you know, in the fruits. So again, I leave you right now with that question. Again, had I been smarter, I wouldn't have even asked the question. Mm-hmm. Nobody would have known the difference here, I promise you. But, you know, I'm an honest guy, so I wanted to share that Tosis with you. And Tosis has a major, major headache with this, the safe of this mission. Now, the Mishnah concludes with two words. Umishalem Mi beso. What does Mishali mean?
Pays up.
He pays. Who pays? The Dayan pays. Now, how many Dayanim were there in this case? Let's go back to the beginning of the Mishnah. It says, Don Es Hadin. What does that mean? Don Es Hadin? He judged the case in singular. There was only one judge. That would support the Shita of Shmuel against the Shita Rabbi Avo. Because Rabbi Avo says that there's no such thing as a judgment of less than a Beis Din of three judges. That now the fact that that the judge has to pay, right, these two last words of the Mishnah, Mishalim Beis, so there are two chidushim here. What are the two chidushim that are inherent or hinted at in the words Mishalim Ibeso? Number one, David?
Judgment one is valid.
That the judgment is valid. Right. Because if the judgment wasn't valid, then Reuven has to fork over the money that he took from Shimon, or the other way around, I don't remember the... And that's it. Everyone shalom al Yisrael. Nothing happened. You know, Reuven can't walk around with money that he illegitimately took from Shimon. The answer is, it's legitimate. Why is it legitimate? Because we recognize and validate this din. The ruling is upheld. No backs. It's irreversible. That's the first chiddush. The second chiddush is that once you have the first chiddush and it's irreversible, and the money that was forked over from Reuven and Shimon is not going to be given back to Reuven, now we have to know does Reuven have any grievance? Does he have any recourse for getting his money back? He can't get it back from Shimon because Shimon has a kedasu kedin based on a valid judgment, but maybe he could sue the judge, because what did the judge do?
He made a mistake.
And that's exactly the chiddush of this Mishnah. That if a judge makes a mistake, he has to pay for it. And I ask you, Rabosai, you know, I always thought in my mind that, you know, at some point in my life, you know, as I get a little older and hopefully I get a little smarter, that I can apply for a job as a judge. You know, judges get a nice salary. But then I learned this Mishnah and I decided it's not worth it. It's just not worth it. There's too much of a chance of an error. And if you make an error in a $1 million lawsuit, that's going to cost you $1 million. You know what I'm saying? It just isn't worth it. Pay me all the money in the world, I'm not going to take this job. Being a judge is not a good job for a young Jewish boy. David.
When a judge makes a mistake, who finds a mistake? Is it appealed for a higher
Excellent.
Court?
So what's going to be here? David is asking, how do we know he makes a mistake? Who determines that it's a mistake? This guy's got a long beard with payers. He went to yeshiva. He was in Kail for 9 years. You know, he learned to write my Mechutin's Kail for 10 years, if not that, twice the amount. The guy's not an idiot. I mean, he made a decision, and you're telling me he made a toast. Now, watch what goes on here. If the toast is too obvious, like let's say he forgot a pasuk in Chumash, you know what I'm saying? Then the judgment can't be valid. No way, no how. You can't contradict a pasuk in Chumash, and then the whole Mishnah falls apart. So somehow we're going to have to assume that it's not a blatant mistake, it's a subtle mistake. Does everybody see the difference I'm trying to make? If it's a blatant error, you know, the Torah says black and he says red, then the whole din is completely torpedoed. It can't be valid. So you must be talking about a much more subtle mistake, but nevertheless a mistake. So, you know, we're walking a tightrope over here. It can't be too blatant of a mistake. It can't be a subjective mistake, because if it's totally subjective, totally subtle, then I don't know who in the world has the authority to say that he made a mistake. And again, David, there's no such thing as an appeal to a higher court. So we're going to have to tread a very, very dangerous middle of the ground here, where it's not a blatant error, and therefore the judgment is valid, but nevertheless, we can determine somehow objectively that he made a mistake. It's not blatant, it's not obvious, he's not contradicting a pasuk of Chumash, but nevertheless, it's a mistake, and we know it's a mistake. And the fact that it's not such a blatant error somehow gives us, or gives the halacha the power, the punch, to validate his decision. Hence, Shimon, you know, is running away with Reuven's money, and he doesn't have to give it back because we validate this decision. But at the same time, we know he made a mistake. Very difficult. That's what this next piece of Gemara is all about. But I give you this introduction because I want you to empathize with the Gemara. Can you feel the pain of the Gemara? You know, we think of the Gemara as just, you know, an old book. You know, it's a historical document that was written 16 centuries ago. But it's not. You have to live the Gemara. And if you live the Gemara and you feel the pulse of the Gemara, you can identify with the Gemara, you can commensurate with the Gemara's pain over here. How is this make any sense? You're going to tell me that he made an error, we can clarify and objectify the error, and there's no question it's an error, and yet you're going to validate the din. which means that it could have been such an error. You know, if it was a really bad error, then the whole thing is, you know, against the Torah. You know, that can't be. So, so I want you to empathize with this next piece of work.
This is Baptist Tosaf. I mean, it wasn't a glaring error in Tahor versus Tamei. So, you know.
So, what,
so how is it any different? Than
what is it in Dine Mamanus? You know, you have, let's say, Reuven is suing Shimon for this. And Reuven brings two witnesses. If he doesn't bring two witnesses, then we send him home crying because you need two witnesses. He brought in two witnesses. Well, what happened with these witnesses? We interrogated the witnesses, Lomazon, right? Although we had a sugya earlier that maybe you don't have to interrogate the Edom, all right, fine. So what is it over here? What was the mistake of the Dayan? Again, Rabbo say he can't be an idiot. And if he is an idiot and he contradicts the Torah law, there's no way that you're gonna validate that judgment. We are working with two premises. Number one, the judgment is valid, and number two, he made a boo-boo. How do you arrive at that conclusion? But first, before we sweat it out with this Gemara, we have a problem for Rabbi Avo. Right? Because Rabbi Avo said that there's no decision with less than three judges that's valid. Here, we're validating this decision, yet it was made by one judge. Don es hadin, he judged the case. Says Rabbi Avo, what's the case of the Mishnah? In this case, in what askina are we dealing with? There's no such thing as a bezdin less than three, unless the litigants decide as a mutually accepted agreement that we will. You see this Jew here? He's a good guy. He knows his stuff. He has a wealth of experience. Let's agree to accept his judgment. Well, I have news for you. If the litigants, both litigants, the plaintiff and the defendant, accept the judgment of one single judge, it's not a beis din. They can create a din that simply is generated and has the status of a valid din based on their kiblu alayim. Kiblu means to accept. Does anybody happen to have a sitter here? Or anybody here know the Nusach Erev Rosh Hashanah? You know, we do Ataras Nedarim, and we have a whole list of all sorts of vows. Does the word Kabbalah appear on that list? I'm just trying to remember, I forgot.
I think so.
Is it there? You know, there's a whole list of the Nedarim, Shavuos, Yisurim, Charamik, Minhagim, you know, everything. I'm curious. I don't know, again, it has nothing to do with today's Shia, but it just sometimes, my father used to say, it's like something flies into your head and it bothers you. So, like, I got a fly here that bothers me. Doesn't the word Kabbalah appear there on that list? Oh man, this is an art school. I don't know how to deal with an art school, but okay. They should have Ataras Nedarim, right? Even art school.
So.
What?
617, I think. So.
617. Okay, if you're right, I'm very impressed. Yes, 617.
That's right.
617 is in the English page, so it's the translation of Kiddush Levana. That's for you.
Maybe 716.
All right, we'll look at 716. Any number you choose is just good for me. I'll give you the siddur, but if you have the old classic, you know, regular siddurim, I'll find it for you in a jiff. But okay, we'll work this out. Anyway, it's irrelevant. Anyway, I was trying to teach the taich. What does it mean, Kabbalah? It says kibbul alayim. Usually, if you give me a gift and I decide to receive and accept a gift, that's called Kabbalah. Kibalti esamatana. But that, the translation of that into English is to accept. Here, it's not that you received something and you were very happy to receive it. You know, so you sent me a gift and I received the gift. That's not what Kabbalah means. Kabbalah means hischaivus. Are you familiar with that word? Don, you like to learn new Hebrew words? Okay? Here's a new Hebrew word if you don't know it. Hitchayvut. What does that mean? A self-accepted commitment or obligation.
Responsibility.
Correct. And when you take upon yourself that this judge is going to decide whether I owe you $1 million or I won't owe you $1 million, that's an absolute hitchaivut.
Shum Kabbalah.
Shum Kabbalah. That's all I need. Shum Kabbalah. See, the word Kabbalah means that the word Kabbalah in that Torah Sederim means hitchaivut. When a person takes upon himself an obligation, I vow and I pledge that I will pay you $1,000. Then you're going to need Ataris Nadarim. And it's not so easy to get that Ataris Nadarim in that case. But here's a case where the two litigants agreed to accept upon themselves the decision of a judge. One single judge. That's called Kibul Alayim. Now, wait a second. Does anybody have a problem with this? The Mishnah is talking about a case of Kibul Alayim. Does that bother you at all?
It's going against the grain of free.
Fine, we can accept anybody. We can say that Joe Schmo is going to make a decision for us. That's binding. We both accepted a Kibul Alayim. I'm bothered by this. Because what does the Mishnah say in this case? He made an error, the judge, and what happens as a result of the error? He's got to pay out of pocket. What do you mean he has to pay out of pocket? They accepted upon themselves, that's called Kibul Alayim, his judgment. Buddy, you got to sleep in the bed that you made. You know, we're not going to have any Rachmanis on you. There's no compassion here. What do you mean you have recourse to sue the judge? What do you mean sue the judge? You accepted his decision. Ihachi, says the Gemara, if the Mishnah is addressing a case of Kibul Alayim, amai mishalem beiso. Why in heaven's tarnation can he sue the judge? He accepted the judge's decision. So Gemara says, let's backtrack a little. Let's whittle it down. It wasn't a full-fledged Kibul Alayim. It was a half-baked Kibul Alayim. The Amru Le, what did they say to this Dayan? Dinus Lon. Lon means on our behalf. Dinus means you judge us. Din Torah. In other words, we're going to accept you as the vehicle, so to speak, as the scholar and the authority to tell us what is the law of the Torah in this case. Is that what the judge did? Oh no. He didn't tell them what the law of the Torah is. He made a mistake. And what he told them was not based on the Torah law. Therefore, he has to pay. The only etchaivut that they had was a conditional, partial etchaivut. We're willing to accept your judgment as if you were a bezdin. But only if you follow the Torah's regulations. You come up with your own new rules. That's not acceptable to us.
So it can't be a subtle difference here. If the saying is against halakha.
So that's what the Gemara is going to analyze now. Omo le Rav Safra le Rabbi Abba. Dita b'mai. B'mai means in what? Meaning, what was the nature of his mistake for which he has to pay out of pocket, but the din is valid? Elam, what's Elamah, Rabosai? If you'll say, right, Elamah always introduces a havamim. If you're going to tell me, Dita b'dvar Mishnah, the Bona Shalom. How many books did they have in their library? It's all manuscripts, right? Because this is before the printing press. They had six books. Basically six Mishnahs. That was the whole... You know, you walk in today to a lawyer's office, you know. I don't know if there's anything...
You know, now.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, in the old days, I'm saying, you remember... The fancy lawyers. I don't know if there's anything inside the binding. You know what I'm saying? It could be it's air inside the binding, but it looks really impressive, you know. So today you walk into a Talmud Chacham's library. I mean, this is bupkis. This is nothing. I mean, you know, you could go to Gush Etzion and look at the yeshiva's library. Go to any decent yeshiva on the face of the map. You will see room after room after room of books. Yeah, I remember I was once, I told you, I asked for a tea. And imagine, I hadn't been in Lakewood in 40 years. I go to the library, and like I was like uplifted because it's a fantastic library, and nobody says hello to me. Till somebody comes over to me and says to me, we don't allow drinking in the library. That was my Shalom Aleichem. That's what I call a Lichtische yeshiva. You know, if it would have been bells, the whole base manager would have come over to give me Shalom Aleichem. And if you know bells, it's like a big temple, you know what I'm saying? But okay, you know, Litvaks have other redeeming features, you know, but not this one, you know what I'm saying? So don't drink tea in the library. I didn't know that that was the rule. It wasn't like I was deliberately trying to rebel against the rules of the game. Anyway, getting back to this. So here's my drama for today. You know, my Rebbe used to say, a good teacher, it means he took a course in drama. I didn't take a course in drama, but got a gigantic library. At the time of the Gemara, the library consisted of 6 books. That was the whole Gansa library. I don't even know if they could afford a 7th book. You know what I'm saying? Books were very expensive. They were manuscripts. They were illustrated manuscripts. Those Christian type of pictures in the back. You know what I'm saying? So what happened? The Dayan Tov Bidvar Mishnah, Rabbi said. What does that mean, Tov Bidvar Mishnah?
Clear mistake.
He forgot a Mishnah. He gave you a Psak Halacha against the Mishnah. Again, how that happened is beyond me. Because, you know, you go to a man for judgment, you assume the man has some experience, some knowledge. The man didn't know a Mishnah. You know, if the guy was in front of me, I don't know what I would do. I would have to hold myself back from strangling him to death. I mean, what do you mean you didn't know a Mishnah? How can you not know a Mishnah? That's what Gemara says. He didn't know a Mishnah. Says the Gemara, if that's the case, Ha'amar Rav Sheshes, Amar Rav Yasi, Tov Bidvar Mishnah Chozer. If the judge contradicts a Mishnah, what does Chozer mean?
No doubt.
The din is worthless. It's invalid. It's like, you know, he didn't know a Pasuk in Chumash. A Mishnah is like a Pasuk in Chumash. How can you Pasuk against the Mishnah? That's not a Psak. That's garnish. That's not worth a dime. Throw it out of court. Chozer means it's completely null and void. So then if it's null and void, why are you telling him to pay? On the contrary, let Shimon fork over the money that he took from Reuven against the Mishnah. That's not a din. There's no such thing as a din against the Mishnah. That's too blatant and obvious of a mistake, and it's so bad of a mistake that it cannot be recognized and validated. Ella says the Gemara, we have to go down a different path. D'tah b'shikul adas. He made a mistake in a kind of a judgment. Shikul means when you have two things on two sides of a scale and you try to figure which way outweighs the other one. What does das mean? Das means his understanding, his wisdom. Shikul means to weigh the evidence, you know, on this side and that side, and he made a mistake in the evidence. Now, wait a second, on both sides. If he made a judgment error, David, what question are you going to ask now? Because you asked it 5 minutes ago, but now I think it's really, really pressing.
How do you know
he made a mistake? You bring in 5 Jews and you'll get 6 opinions, right? If you got 2 Jews, you'll have 18 opinions, right? Well, what happened over here? The man made a judgment call. You know, in sports, I think we mentioned it the other day, you know, when an umpire makes a mistake, you know, today they catch you. I don't know, I wouldn't want to be an umpire. They have all the videos immediately, right? So that was a mistake in perception. Perception means he thought the ball was in between the knees of the batter and the shoulders of the batter. You see, I still remember something from my youth. And he called it a strike. But really, it was a ball. Okay, that's a toss in perception. Here, it's not a toss in perception. I mean, it's not shot that he's blind or he didn't see correctly. You know, he had his spectacles on. So the Gemara says, Tov b'shikul hadas. Das means this is a mistake up in the brain. This has nothing to do with perception. This has to do with judgment. So he made a mistake in judgment. How do you know he made a mistake in judgment? Bring in somebody else and he'll tell you he didn't make a mistake. I agree with his judgment call. Bring in a third guy, he'll say, no, you both made a mistake. And this goes on and on, infinitum, until World War III, right? I mean, well, what's going on over here? You know what I'm saying? The Gemara went from one extreme to the other. We got to find that way somewhere in the middle. Because if you're going to tell me he's taught Bidvar Mishnah, the whole din is completely batel muvuto. It's not worth anything. Throw it out of court, and Shimon certainly has recourse to get every last dime back from Reuven. If, on the other hand, you can go to the other extreme, he made a mistake in a judgment call, And therefore, you know, other judges might have agreed with him, so therefore we have to validate the case. He didn't contradict anything in the books. So then I don't understand. Why do you assume it's a mistake? I mean, maybe it's not a mistake. I mean, you're validating the din. He doesn't contradict what he says in the law books. And what, he made a judgment call? So how do you know this judgment call is wrong? Maybe you'll bring in 50 experts and 49 of them will agree with him. I don't know. Or 25 will agree with him. I don't know. Again, flip a coin. I don't know who's right and who's wrong over here. But why do you say he has to pay out of pocket? Now, I understand why the judgment is valid and the din is chal, because he doesn't contradict any law. Elo, the word Elo always introduces the final word, the bottom. This is, Rabosai, this is what we've been waiting for. I say this with tears in my eyes, because this is what we've been waiting for. This is, you know, people, when I was a kid, you know, we used to wait all of New Year's Eve to see which song would be, you remember this? Which song would be the top song of the year? This, you don't remember? When we had transistor radios? I'm really dating myself. I mean, you know, if I was teaching my 18-year-olds in Mavaseret, they would ask me, what's a transistor radio? Literally, they never heard of the radio. So this is what I'm glued for. Tell me exactly what this toast is all about. Omar Rav Papa Kigon Shrei Tanoi. And now the next, what is the next letter? Not the next word, but the next letter on your page.
A vav.
Again, I'm going to have to ask myself the old question. Is it a vav hamachalik or a vav hamachaber? Well, what comes afterwards? It says Shrei Amoroi. Those two are opposites. Either they're Tanoi or they're Amoroi. They can't be both. So the vav here again has to be a case of a vav hamachalik. It means or. So it's either or. There was a debate amongst two. What does trey mean?
Two.
What is tlas?
Three.
How do you know tlas is three? No, I'm just asking. No, because in Aramaic, a tough replaces a shin. So tlas is really shalosh. Okay. So anyway, there were two opinions. And the Tanoim were fighting it out. There was Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. There was Rav Shimon and Rav Yehuda. They're fighting it out. Oh, two Amoraim. Rav and Shmuel, Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, you know, they're fighting it out. Now, what happens when you have a debate in halacha? There's one key word that we look for all over Shas, do a word search. The Hilchasa. The Hilchasa means when the Gemara issues a final decision in a machlokas. Hilchasa ke Beis Hillel. Hilchasa ke Chacham. Hilchasa ke Rav Yochanan. V'lo itmar Hilchasa. Lokimar, velokimar. The debate rages on and on and on. Normally, we get together the Beis Nagadol, we get this finest court, the Sanhedrin, we take a vote on it. That's called Amdu L'Minyan. And as a result, majority rules Hilchasa. We have a bottom line in fancy English today. You call it normative halacha. Have you heard that phrase? You know, normative halacha. Okay, I'm going to give a lecture at the OU Center on the normative halacha regarding the internet. Use of the internet. Okay. You can't go to that shir because you'll be in my shir. Now, how am I going to give the shir there if I'm giving the shir here? That I haven't figured out yet.
Internet.
Okay, through the internet. Right. But how you speak at the two sides of your mouth, you'd say two different things. Anyway. So we have, what do you say, Steve?
You have to be a politician.
Politician, okay, that's good. Yeah, Israeli politics. V'lo itmar hilchasa lo kimar v'lo kimar. No, there's no final decision. Rabosai, this is good and bad. What is it good for? What question do we now answer? We understand.
That is,
if there was never a final decision.
So it's not that lifi halacha.
No. I'm saying, remember, Rabosa, again, I'm going to go through my whole dramatics again. We have to, probably, on the one hand, the law is valid. On the other hand, he made a mistake. We're trying to juggle that. So now I'm saying, lo it my hilchasa, lo kamar. That's good news for what?
The law exists.
Exactly. We validate the decision. Why? You can't invalidate the decision. It was never a final halacha. So if this chacham, this dayan says, you know, I think Beis Hillel is right, or I think Beis Shammai is right. You know, I analyzed the case, and I took all the svaras, and I came to the conclusion that Beis Shammai makes sense. V'lo itmar. Hilchasa. The word Hilchasa never was, they never took a vote. There was never a final decision. Lokimar v'lokimar. It still remains an outstanding issue. The debate rages on. So he took a stand on this debate. Perfectly legit. He can't tell me that he made a mistake, right? He didn't contradict the law. The law was never determined. That's the good news. The bad news is, so why do you call it a mistake? If there was no hilchasa,
why is he liable?
And furthermore, why is he liable? But I don't understand. You call it a mistake. You want to pay him, you know, recourse, and he has to assume, and blah, blah, blah. What? The man made it. The Shikul HaDas is he analyzed with his das the various opinions on this issue, and he took a stand. I think that's very laudable. It's nice when you get a judge to take a stand. He took the wrong stand. Why did he take the wrong stand? V'sugyan di alma aliba dechad minayim. There was no hilchasah, but there was something else. Sugyan di alma. Says Rashi, hiluch dina. You'll see this about 10 lines down from the top. Hiluch dina. What is hiluch dina? So if I could borrow a phrase from my very limited knowledge of secular law, very limited, I took 3 courses in political science and constitutional law when I was in graduate school, there's something called precedent. Now let me try to explain what precedent is all about. You have court systems, and they come up with decisions. Very often there's a dissenting view, there's tremendous debates, big issues. How does the law eventually evolve and come to a final determination? There's something called tradition, precedent tradition. What is precedent tradition? The judges, over the course of time, somehow, for some unknown reason, it's not always clear, it's like an intuitive kind of thing, they gravitate towards one view. And with each subsequent generation, they build on the shoulders of the previous generation. We took the following approach and we determined the law here in the year 1800. In the year 1850, same case came up, right? And we again followed that tradition. So evolves the law. That's called Hiluch Dina. Rashi says Hiluch Dina means we could have gone down this road and the tradition of the judges could have evolved in this way, like Beit Shammai, but instead Hiluch Dina, we took this road. And over the course of generations, one generation after the other accepted Beis Hillel instead of Beit Shammai. Comes along this daya. I call it in Yiddish an Iber Chacham. Are you familiar with that phrase? He's more smart than the smart. You know? Right. He outsmarts the smart. There used to be a program called Get Smart. This man is beyond Get Smart. You think you're smart because you have a tradition. For the last 3 centuries, you've been posketing like Beit Shammai. Well, like Beis Hillel. I'm very original. I'm an original thinker. I want to go back to the basics. I'm going to take a time machine 300 years back into the past. And there I am, sitting in the Beis Medrash, I'm listening to Beis Hillel argue against Beis Shammai, and I determined that Beis Hillel is right, and Beis Shammai is wrong, or the other way around. Not allowed to do that. That's a no-no. Again, does it mean that Beis Shammai's view is not a Torah view? Well, we never came to any hilchasah. There was never an Amidah L'minyan. Technically, formally, Beit Shammai is just as valid as Beis Hillel because we never came to a hilchasa. We never determined the following halacha. But there's something called sugyan di alma. The alma means in the Weltarayin. The sugyan the Weltarayin. This is the way the Welt, this is the way we fear itself. This is the way we live in the Welt. We go according to this tradition because this tradition has evolved over centuries. You you think you're a super chacham? You can outsmart all the judges over the last few generations because you want to go back to the basics. I applaud your originality. My Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik wrote a book called Ish Halacha, Halachic Man. Half of the book is about being original. I mean, one thing the Rav couldn't tolerate was people who just translate things and they repeat exactly what was said over and over again. They regurgitate that, which you know. For the Rav, for my Rebbe, that was like he would get stomach aches from that. He'd get kind of nausea. Rabbi Tendler, I don't know if you heard of Rabbi Moshe Tendler, who's Rabbi Moshe Feinstein's son-in-law, and Rabbi Tendler Shlita said he learned Chulin by the Rav twice. He never heard the Rav repeat himself. I was in a shir once, sitting next to Chaim Wilson, and the Rav was stuck on a problem, so Chaim says, Rebbe, 5 years ago you had the same problem. Let me tell you what you said 5 years ago. I want to remind you. So the Rav took his hand, smacked it down on the table, said, don't tell me what I said 5 years ago. You listen to what I say now. Originality was it. There was no zero tolerance for just Iberzogin for saying over that which somebody else said. It had to be original. You'll read Ish Halacha. I think we have a copy of it here in English. Halachic man. I don't know where it disappeared, but it was here. Oh, no. Not when it comes to judges. In a machokek, you know, we spoke about theoretical law, understanding the law, analyzing the law, transmitting the Torah. That's one thing. Be mechadish all the chidush in the world. Be part of the mesorah of chidush haTorah. But when it comes to legal decisions, there's such a thing as tradition. Al titosh mitoras imecha. And that's called sugyan di alma. Sugyan di alma liba de chad minay. The Dayanim over the course of time have accepted one particular opinion. The Azal Ihu, which literally translates, he went ahead, meaning this Dayan that we're talking about in the Mishnah in Bechoros. The other ki idach, he decides to paskin like the other opinion. Idach means the other one. Hainu shikol adas. What brought him to this mistake was that he relied on his own shikol adas. Shikol adas is wonderful. It's great to analyze, be fresh, be original, go back to the original sources and dissect the issue as it emerges in its basic form. That's an interesting kind of approach and very, very praiseworthy, but not to the extent that it undermines the sugyan di alma, because the sugyan di alma will determine, just like Hilchasa, how we paskin and what the final law is in any dispute and in any debate. The debates will not rage on, you know, as an unended debate. There is a point in which there's something called sugyan di alma. You want to make your own shikol hadas, that's fine, but you're limited. You cannot make a shikol hadas based on your understanding that undermines the sugyan di alma. So now, Rabosai, let's go back to our empathetic presentation of Tosus's problem, of the Gemara's problem. On the one hand, we're saying the din that he passed in is valid. That means the Torah recognizes the din. On the other hand, it's against the law. How can it be against the law at the same time the Torah validates the law? The answer is it's not explicitly against the halakha. It's not against the Mishnah. It's not against the Hilchasa. It's a shikol hadas in which he decided to force Shimon to pay up Reuven because he thought in his judgment that Beit Shammai is right in his debate against Beis Hillel. And therefore he took that leap of faith, giving himself authority when he doesn't have the authority to do so. He oversteps his bounds when he contradicts the Hilchasa di Alma, the Hiluch Dina, because there was a definite approach of the Dayanim, Kechad Minayu, like one particular judge. V'azel iu v'avid ki'idach, he did it like the other opinion. That other opinion is very good if you're learning lumdus, you know, theoretical, conceptual learning and analyzing the Torah, but it's not good for Psak Din. Psak Din has to reflect the tradition and the way the halacha evolves and develops over the course of time. If that be the case, number one, on the one end, his judgment is valid, the Torah recognizes it, it's irreversible, and the reason for that is because he has reflected the Torah, he hasn't contradicted the Torah. Again, he reflected the Torah according to one view in a great debate between Tanoim or between Amoraim. However, he has to pay out of pocket because he made a big mistake here. He ignored the Hiluch Dina, the Sugyan di Alma, the tradition that evolved over time, and he paskin like the other opinion. That he's not allowed to do. And for that, it's a toast, and he has to pay. So, Rabosai, let's make a note of where we got up to. And we're here on Daf Vav Amud Aleph, Lema Kitanoi. Shall we say that this issue between Shmuel and Rabbi Avo about the validity of one Dayan and his judgment, or two Dayanim, is a Machlokis Tanoi?
So going back to this case, it means the judge needs to pay out of his own pocket if the real guilty party refuses.
That's true. If the mistake is clarified and the litigant is a tzaddik gomor, in fact, in the next sugya that we're about to embark upon for tomorrow, should the dayanim, knowing that the litigant is a sensitive soul, he's an ethical person, and he might not be comfortable with the decision because maybe there's a margin of error in every decision of a Beis Din, should the Dayanim therefore appeal to him to at least give up on half of his claim? So in other words, let's say the Din is going to go in favor of Reuven against Shimon. Shimon is now going to have to pay $1,000 to Reuven. Should the Dayanim appeal to the ethical, sympathetic part of his heart, of Shimon's heart, and say, look, you're about to take from Reuven $1,000. That's an awful sum of money. You may be in the right, in the law, strictly speaking. You know, we gave a psak and you're okay. You know what? We're human, we're fallible, and you might be holding on to his money. How about making a compromise and giving up on half the money? You'll get half, and he'll hold on to half. He'll be happy, you'll be a little bit less than happy. But you'll be happy about the fact that you're not holding on, heaven forbid, to someone else's money. And the Gemara is going to think that maybe that is really what lies at the heart of this whole issue about what's called pshara. I have a friend, his name is Yitzi Kasdan, he lives in Silver Spring. I don't know if he still has this organization, but then, back in the day, he had an organization called pshara. And what they did was, they created a board of judges, Talmidei Chachamim, who would mediate in cases of dispute based on Torah guidelines. So it wasn't just, you know, glatt in the velter, right? You know, Reuven says to Shimon, you owe me $1,000, so pay up $500. Maybe Reuven made up the whole story. There's got to be some halachic guidelines. And they created an organization called Pshara. And it saved a lot of disputes, because otherwise they took it either to a secular court or sometimes to a Beis Din. It wasn't so easy, and it created so much enmity that the idea of pshara, of mediation, was something that was very much needed. And that's going to be the sugya tomorrow, because on the one hand, the Torah gives you justice, the Torah gives you law, there's mishpat, the Torah gives you regulations, there are laws that have to be followed. And tzedek means to follow the laws of the Torah. Pshara is not the pshara. You know, he gets half and he gets half. That doesn't follow the laws of the Torah. So how do we have the chutzpah to make that plunge and try to convince the litigants, according to one opinion, to make a pshara? I mean, that really undermines the whole structure of justice. So Terev also, so we'll stop.
Rabbi Avot,
the shiur is officially over. You know,
I just Rabbi Avot.
If anybody wants to stay, please stay.
But I'm just Rabbi Avot. Rabbi Avot. Maybe you can rep for Rabbi Avot. I mean, we're asking a kasha on Rabbi Avot, because it seems that Rabbi Avot would require three, right? So maybe you could say the same. You could push it to say that done, when it says done din, he considers based in as one entity. One entity, yeah. And then still you could even
have the singular use of the word "don" is referring to Beis Din.
Maybe I could look at Rabbi Avot.
Yeah, but then it says "mishalei mibeso." It should have said "mishalei mibeso." If the three judges, they would split the payment equally. And like for example, in Edom Zomimim, what happens is if the Edom plagiarized. Purge themselves.
Purge themselves, then they owe.
Correct, right. So each aid will pay his, you know, corresponding to his person. Like if it were three aidim, each one pays a third. If they're two aidim, each one pays half. Same thing would apply to Dayanim if it's a Beis Din. But the truth is that once it's a Beis Din, then they're protected by what's called Ntilas Rishus. Remember that sugi that we said before?
I know. So what if a Beis Din does a Shikul Adas? If a Beis Din But Basin goes against the precedent, what's going to happen also? If we say, if we're going to end up, if we're to say there's such a thing as Shikul Hadas, an individual.
If I'm not mistaken, in the case of a Besdin, since they have the power to force their decision on the litigants, it's almost as if Kibla Alayim, it's like an accepted Kibla Alayim. And since they're within the law, now again, if Besdin was, if you had a three judge court that was Torah into the Mishnah, that's a whole different story. So again, if anyone's around at 10:30 and is interested in a 45-minute Iyun Shia, we're going to talk about one of the sugyas that we've done here. But the Iyun, then it's I think I have something exciting to share with you. All right then.
I mean, even today, you know, I'm at the